So this is class number 7 from Bhajan Rahasyam. We're in the middle of that discussion. That this is Viparlamba, the separation of the gopis. Krishna's away with the coward boys during the day, herding the cows and sometimes vibrating his veno, which is a very short, 6-inch long bansuri made of bamboo. And gopis are recollecting the sound of that flute and the sight and form of Krishna. And they're feeling intense pangs of separation in his absence, because they haven't seen him since early in the morning when they left his company in the Kunjavan of Nidiban and other places of Vrindavan after the evening pastimes. He went his way, they went their way. They went to Barsana, he went to Nandagon. So there was separation. The lovers went their separate ways. And Krishna joined his other friends, his coward friends, and the gopis joined their mother-in-laws and fathers, and they were pining for each other and waiting for the moment to again meet and enjoy the happiness of each other's company in various pastimes of love and union, which are called sambhog vilas or vilas. And this is viraha, viraha and sambhog, union and then separation, being together and being separated. So in separation, they're talking to each other, "Hey Sakhi, did you see Krishna when he walked out in the morning and he looked so beautiful with the, what they say, niryogapash, Krita Lakshana or Vichitram, Vichitra. He looks so Vichitra, so debonair and so charming and enchanting with these Niryoga and Pasha. These are two ropes that cowherd men that they have. One rope is for tying the legs of the cow, and another is for tying the calf. And that's what the commentary is saying here. The gopis are saying, what a beautiful sight, because one, Krishna has his pagari, has his turban. And this one particular rope, which is described here, this one rope is yellow. It's actually a bunch of, sometimes rope is made of jute. Jute is a type of plant, jute. Or it's made of silk. Silk ropes are there, like these, the string of covetures or something they call the, those ropes they have in, they call it covetra or something, that rope, that silk. Mangala pavitra. Mangala pavitra is some, the mala of threads that Nrisimhadev wears, different colors. So they make ropes out of silk. Now Krishna has his rope, it's yellow silk, and at the end of it there's strands of pearls. And his father's a big king. So he wraps it around his turban, and then he, in a very decorative way, and it just kind of hangs off his pagri. That's one rope, and another rope he throws over his shoulder. And they have their functions, not only beauty and attraction, but there's something that makes him debonair. He's a flashy dresser. He's stylish, dear Lalita. And it captures the attention of the gopis and creates more enchantment in their heart. Because someone just wears blue pants and a white shirt and he tucks it in and walks down the street, it's rather boring. Not much excitement. But if he has the blue pants and the white shirt, then he puts a purple handkerchief in his pocket, and that's a little something, little splash of color. And then around his neck, if he wears a yellow scarf, then he's really, really, really looking wild. With a purple handkerchief and like this. But Krishna, he is a very, so the, all these things, why is he doing that? Basically, he's doing that to enchant the hearts of the gopis, to make him, make his form and his memory go deeper and deeper into their consciousness. Then Krishna dresses like that to captivate the hearts of the gopis. And captivate he did, indeed. And they remembered it, and they're specifically talking about these different things. They say, "Oh, Sakhi, what a beautiful sight! These two brothers, Ram, Balaram and Krishna, walking together into the forest, wearing this niryog and pash on their bodies." Now it's described, what's the difference between the two? "When the cows are being milked, with a rope, their restless calves are tied before them to a post in the ground. In this way, their mothers can see them. This rope is called niryog." Interesting. It's because you see, if you live in the country, the mother feels happy, and they're not that smart, but they feel happy if they see the calf nearby, even they're licking the calf. And the backside, the udder, the cow person, he's drawing the milk from the udder. And the calf is the mother cow is thinking, "Yes, my calf is back there milking," but it's actually the cow, the man is milking. And she's licking and so intent and absorbed in licking her baby. So that's called niryoga, that particular rope, which is put around the neck of the calf and tied nearby the mother, sometimes very close so she can lick him, or sometimes within sight. It's called near yoga, which means no connection. Yoga means connection, near means not. So there's connection, but there's not connection. The mother is seeing, there's eye connection, there's heart connection, mother to guide to the baby, the baby calf, the mother to the calf. But there's no connection, but the baby's not taking the milk. Now that's called near yoga. And the other one is called pash. This is pash. Pash, this is binds the two legs of the restless cow to keep her calm while being milked. Sometimes the cow, there's one for the baby and one for the mother. When the mother's being milked, with the touch of the calf or even the dairy man or the cow, the gopa, the cowman, when he touches the rudder, she gets a little jittery, the mother, and then she kicks her leg like this. She kicks her leg forward, and then the milk pail's there, and it gets knocked over. And all the milk that he gets spilled on the ground. So the pasha, they tie the two legs together. You see? So then the cow can't kick. You know, they tie the back legs together like this. So near yoga and pasha used by Sri Krishna are made of soft yellow threads of jute. And here it says jute. And are tied at either end with clusters of pearls. Like the other gopas, Krishna ties the near yoga to the top of his turban and lets the pasha hang from his shoulders onto his chest. His attire is so fascinating that anyone who sees it cannot help but be charmed. And the mere sight of Krishna dressed like this actually makes the love-filled gopis fall unconscious. It's such a profound and beautiful sight in their heart. As they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So the gopis, they're beholding Premdara. They are holding the greatest amount of love in their heart. No one loves Krishna more than the gopis. No one is more surrendered or dedicated to Krishna than the gopis of Vrindavan. They're absolutely dedicated and completely with every breath and every thought and every feeling and every movement. When they see Krishna with their prema-filled eyes and love-drenched hearts, then they see Krishna to the fullest and has the greatest impact and greatest effect on their mind and consciousness when they see Krishna. Oh, and someone else, look at Krishna. Someone else says, what's it? He's got a rope on his head. He has a rope hanging off his head and a rope on his shoulder. What's the big deal? Why are you fainting? And no, don't you? But he's so beautiful. I don't think he's so beautiful. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So they're beholding. The love is what gives the drishti. Prem drishti is called, prem drishti. The greater the love, the greater the perception. An example is in the life of Srila Prabhupada. Birds are giving their own pravachan. As it says in this same book, Nectar Devotion, that Krishna knew the languages. That's in our 64 qualities book. And Krishna knows the languages of all the living entities. When the demigods come from the heavenly planets to see him in the afternoon during Uttara Goshta Lila, when Krishna is returning from cow herding in the afternoon between 4 and 6 o'clock, 4:30 and 6:30 in the evening, then Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Chandra, other devatas, they come down to Brajmandal to bathe in the goduli, the dust of the cows of the feet, and to offer Sanskrit stutis and prayers, Devanagari language, to Krishna. And Krishna reciprocates with them by speaking the language of the demigods, Devanagari, or Sanskrit. And then when he turns to the coward boys like Subal Sakar, Sridham, they look at Krishna and they say, what the hell are they talking about? Swagatam, this, that, the other thing, and all this Sanskrit. Because they speak Brajbhash. The boys speak Brajbhash. There's nothing like Sanskrit at all. They say, what are these guys mumbling, jumbling, blah, 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 blah. Da-da-da-da-da, bingo, da-da-da, tingo, this, that. All these rhyming couplets and padas and Sanskrit and stutis and stotras. It just sounds like gobbledygook. Gobbledygook or some kind of forked tongue or something. So Krishna, and then Krishna speaks Brajavasha. Then the cows are wandering far away, and then Krishna calls them, haw, 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 and he calls the cows by speaking their language. And he talks to the birds. And then in our 64 quality book, I said, then Krishna also speaks the language of love. It's there. It says the quality, it's one of Krishna's 64 qualities called Bhashavit. Bashavit means he's very expert and victorious in speaking different kinds of languages. And we explained in our book that he's very expert in speaking the language of love. And he inspires the conditioned soul within the heart and speaks to the conditioned soul within the heart. Oh, conditioned soul, hear this vibration. You hear the sound vibration? This is your guru. I am coming to you as Sadguru. Do you understand? Can you perceive? And then the person, the shishya or the chela, he thinks, yes, Krishna is speaking to me in this way. Then Krishna speaks in the heart of the guru. Oh Guruji, you're my representative. You should accept this chela as your shishya, or this person as your chela. I like this. It's the language of love. So Krishna can understand what they're saying. And moreover, Krishna has pet parrots also. He has pet parrots and peacocks, so he must be speaking to them. The Sakis are relishing Krishna's beauty and speaking about Krishna's beauty to one another. In the entire creation of Brahma, there is no living entity who will not be charmed by seeing the sweetness of Krishna's beauty, which attracts the entire universe. The Sanskrit for that is Bhuvana Mohana Bhuvana, Bhuvana Mohan. Bhuvana means Om Bhura Bhuvasva, Bhuvana Mohan. He bewilders and enchants the entire universe. When Krishna plays a melody or a raga, as an enchanting Murali flute, he collects all the cows who have wandered far away. And the condition that he creates with the sound vibration is very difficult to describe. With the tinkling of Krishna's ankle bells, there's beautiful melodious sounds and mixes with his sweet flute, and that increases even more the sweetness of the flute. Is there anybody in this world who can maintain his composure upon hearing these sounds? So the gopis are totally immersed in love of God. They are drowning in an ocean of Prem Sagar, Prem Sindhu. They're drowning, and they're calling out to each other, "Oh, Sakhi, look, Krishna's near Yogan Pash. It seems that they are really near Yoga Pash." In other words, there's a play on words here, near Yoga Pash. Near Yoga and Pash are two kinds of ropes, but when you can combine the word near Yoga with Pash, that comes up with a different meaning. It means that it seems that through them, through meeting, is certain to take place. For what the gopis are saying, these near Yoga Pash are actually Prem Pash. They are ropes of love. And when we see these ropes on Krishna's turban and hanging over his shoulder, they completely tie up and bind up our hearts. And we become totally bound to Krishna, to his extraordinary beauty and sweetness. These ropes are not meant for tying calves and cows. They're meant for tying our minds and hearts. With one rope, he ties our minds and keeps our minds near him. And with the other rope, he ties our hearts so we don't try to run away. So in this way, he keeps us near him and prevents us from running away with the near yoga and pash. This is his trap. It is a trap of love. Hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, all the moving living entities of the forest, deer and birds, they themselves also become overwhelmed by prema and become inert, immobile. Trees, creepers, and other living entities give up their natures and adopt the characteristics of moving beings. Interesting. It sounds like those kind of children's Walt Disney, where the trees are dancing and moving and things like that. So the trees are stationary, but when they hear Krishna's flute, they start to move and dance. And that was the most extraordinary thing that we ever saw when we came to Vrindavan in 1977. There were a lot of trees, a lot more than now, especially around the Prikamarg, an area of Ramanreti where most people frequented. We remember going to Nidiban and Sevakunj and other places, and we saw the trees, and the trees were literally standing on the tips of their toes. Usually there's the trunk, the branches, the leaves, flowers. The trunk goes down to the earth, then there's the level of the earth, and then below the earth are the roots of the trees. The roots are generally invisible everywhere around the world. You see the trunk, and that's how it is. But when we came to Vrindavan, you would see that everything normal, trunk, but then all the roots were exposed also, because all the trees were actually dancing on the tips of the roots. And it was very strange. Usually you just see a tree like this. It's just earth around the base and this vertical projectile, or the tree, the trunk, solid trunk. And then the roots are, the way the roots spread out and fan out is invisible under the ground. But in Vrindavan, all the trees were so, and everyone would tell us, he said, what happened to these trees? He said, oh no, these trees are dancing. These trees are hearing Krishna's flute. These are magical trees. This is the magical land of Vrindavan, the land of Krishna. And everything, every word is a song here in Vrindavan. Every step is a dance. And the water is just like nectar. And everything is being moved and enervated by the sweet, dulcet sound of Krishna's murali. The parrots, the birds, the peacocks, the people, everyone's dancing in a special tune and vibration of rag and love. Even the trees are dancing. See, look, see that tree. And we see the trees around Raminreti, and they're just standing on their roots, and there's all air space, and the root that you saw. I don't know if you ever, you can still see here. What kind of tree is this? A dancing tree. The roots are above the ground. It looked like the trees weren't even fixed in the ground. They were just floating on the ground. And you can still see trees like that. It's very extraordinary. This is called reversal of nature, that the immobile and the stationary objects, they start to move and dance. And then the motion, the moving entities, the birds and the animals, they become frozen in their tracks. And they sit there on the branches and they close their eyes. They don't move, and they become like still motion when they hear Krishna's flute. It's reversal of nature due to the... You could say that's what happens to devotees too. Western devotees, they reverse their natures. Their sabah becomes ulta. Their nature comes upside down. The river's flowing like this, and the Yamuna is flowing to the ocean, but when it hears Krishna's flute, sometimes it freezes and stops moving, or sometimes it reverses and goes back towards Yamunotri, opposite direction. Reversal of nature, change of its nature, opposite nature. So people that are materialistic or ordinary people, they come in contact with the sound of Krishna's holy name or Krishna's philosophy, then they have a complete, as they say, turnaround, 360 or 180 degree turnaround. They start walking in the opposite direction, and they reverse their natures. Oh, he used to be like this. I don't know what happened to him. Such a revolutionary change. Overnight he became a vegetarian. And he started chanting Hare Krishna and going. He had never had any interest in God, never had any interest in the church. Now he's living in the church 24 hours a day. And he's rising early in the morning. He's praying all day. What has happened to him? He's really, somebody must be brainwashed. he's been hoodwinked or cajoled or something. They put some chemicals in his body and reoriented his gene structure or something. They say like that, they criticize like that. But this is the trap of Krishna's love. Everyone in their own way, they get trapped by Krishna's niryogapash. Krishna draws the conditioned soul near him. Krishna can keep his eye with a nir-yoga rope. Krishna draws the conditioned soul near his side so he can keep an eye on him. And then if the conditioned soul thinks of running away, then Krishna binds his two legs with a pash, and then he can't run away. He says, hey, I'm bound. It's called love trap. I'm bound by love. The binding of love is the greatest force in the world. It's unbreakable. If one is bound by love, no one and no thing can break the bond. What to speak of Jiva, Bhagavan, Prem, Sambandha, the bondage of love between the Jiva, the living entity, and Bhagavan, God, the love of God. This is the most powerful force in the entire universe. So the gopis are subject to this love. So even ourselves, we become influenced by the Niryoga and Pasha of Krishna. So he has that Niryoga on his turban for us and that Pasha over his shoulders. Tie us up. This verse is there. That concludes these verses about this Mahabhav of the gopis. And starting tomorrow, we want to describe the four different types of Vipralamba, because Bhaktivinoda Thakura is describing these four different varieties of separation from Krishna. And we'll hear about that tomorrow.